You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everybody, to an off-day episode of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. Today's Locked On Rockets is brought to you courtesy of SeatGeek. Download their mobile app for the easiest way to buy tickets, and the promo code LORockets will get you a $20 rebate on your first purchase. So today, as we chat on this Monday evening, it's an off day for the Rockets, getting ready to take on Charlotte Tuesday night at Toyota Center. They're just coming off the big win in Toronto on Sunday night. They're 30-9 on the year. 8 games in a row they've won, 19-2 in their last 21. Just a ridiculous stretch of basketball. And so to break down the X's and O's of how they've done it, I'm joined by Ollie Bajani. You know him as the Rockets Insider. He's a regular guest on this show. Ollie, welcome back, buddy.
Hey, Ben. Happy New Year to everybody out there. I know 9 days late, but just haven't been on.
So. Yeah, first show of 2017.
Happy New
Year. Yep, first show of 2017. Let's get right into the X's and O's. That's what you're good at. You have some great film study pieces regularly. One of the things you've done a lot on Twitter of late is just basically a running diary, I would call it, of what you notice from an X's and O's standpoint the Rockets doing throughout a given game. And I want to focus really on what we've learned in the past week, because you had the brief absence of Pat Beverley. They survived it, thankfully. Wins over the Knicks and Wizards, a little too close for comfort, but got the wins nonetheless. But these last three games, punctuated by the big win in Toronto, you've seen some new trends develop. The main thing I would say, I guess we can start with a full cast of characters except for Clint Capella. And so without Clint Capella, that means major minutes at the center position for Nene and Harrell, and both at various points have had a lot of success. Nene was obviously influential in the Oklahoma City and Orlando games, and then you had Montrezl Harrell going 12 of 13, 28 points against Toronto. So tell me about what you've noticed, how the Rockets are using their centers, how those guys have improved, just how the Rockets are not just surviving, but thriving without Clint Capella.
I think the biggest thing since Capella's injury was that these guys needed some more time anyways to get more chemistry with Harden on the pick and roll. The things I'm noticing right now especially are just the chemistry they have with Harden. When they're setting the screen, they're setting it correctly on the hip of the defender, which Dame Chilton preaches. And then Harden comes around, he has the shooters around him, he can drive or kick out, you know, the normal stuff. But also with these big guys is that they're passing the ball. They're actually being facilitators. Nene's excellent at the elbow and at the high post. And the last few games, the Rockets have done a great job of utilizing his skill level, his skills, at the high post and elbow. So they've been running some plays. When they get him out there, he can pass there. He has a couple great bounce passes against the Magic. He was instrumental in that Oklahoma City game, and rightfully so, because that last play they ran for James Harden, and that pass he made was off the elbow pick and roll that they ran basically all game long, because Oklahoma City would just keep trapping him every single time he came off the screen. So I think right now you're seeing two guys who have developed nice rhythms with James Harden, and it's only going to improve. I mean, Montrezl Harrell has recorded 3-plus assists in 3 of his last 5 games, and he only did that twice last season. So it's like, you know, the more you see this team play, the more you see that Harrell and Nene are improving, and they're just getting better in the flow of the offense. And that's all you can ask for. And if you insert Clint Capella back in, you have a great rebounder there. You have Harrell, who the Rockets use his length exclusively on switches on defense. So you have a weapon there. Then you have Nene, who can, you know, be able to defend bigger bodies down low and not necessarily be a dominant rim protector, but can still be adept at holding down the paint. So you have three guys with three different skill sets. Harrell and Capella are very similar. But I think at the end of the day, Harrell has proved that he can perform well on switches defensively. I think that's something that Mike D'Antoni has noticed. And he's been utilizing it in the final few minutes of the game when Harrell is usually in there instead of Nene. And Harrell's been, you know, more times than not, defending an opposing point guard who's looking to set up an isolation jumper.
Yeah, I think one thing that's pretty clear looking at this Rockets team is that they are extremely well coached and they are responding to the coaching. You mentioned Harrell's passing. That's something that stood out to me. You'll see him make some passes to cutters out of the high post that you would have never seen a year ago and never seen from him at Louisville. So you know that's work the staff is doing with him. I've mentioned on this show that Eric Gordon, not a center, but Gordon's someone to start the year, he was a bit of a shooter. Now he's making more and more plays off the dribble and setting up for others. And to take it another step, you know, that a lot of that's Mike D'Antoni on the offensive end. Then you look at the defensive end. We know what the limitations with Nene and Harrell are in regards to rebounding, size in the case of Harrell. And it just seems like the Rockets are so well coached because whatever the shortcomings are, they put the players around them in a position to succeed. For example, they have Beverly and Harden, the guards, crashing the glass harder than they ever have been to overcome some of those defensive limitations. And all those guys are willing to buy in. You know, at the end of the game last night, we know Harden had the two big defensive plays, the charge he took, the block. Ryan Anderson had a steal. So to me, you know, this would seem to be the case, you know, the ideal scenario where a team has fully bought in to a staff and what the staff is selling them. Because really, whatever the weaknesses are, they're able to mitigate them. And even in ways that you would think there are weak spots, such as James Harden, Ryan Anderson, defense for players like that, you still have them playing hard, and playing hard goes a long way.
You know, a lot of props need to be given to the assistant coaches. I know we give a lot of credit to Mike D'Antoni.
Yep.
But assistant coach Roy Rogers, yep. Excellent job. Assistant coach Jeff Petzelic, excellent job. Something you notice with me pregame when we attend Rockets games is that you always see Roy Rogers before the post injury, he's always with Capella. Now he's always with Harrell, just going down, breaking down the film. And they even sit there by his locker and goes over film. These guys know the X's and O's. They game plan, they sit there and they study the opposing team, make sure they know the tendencies, so they go out there and perform well. And then with Jeff Petzelic, excuse me, he's done a great job working with the Rockets' perimeter defenders. Now, Trevor Ariza, Corey Brewer, Patrick Beverley, you'll notice sometimes during the game, they become the free safety. So teams are going to attack Ryan Anderson on the pick and roll. It's a foregone conclusion. They know that, and that's like a big way to attack the Rockets. But what Ariza does, and what Anderson is doing a great job of, is that they try to funnel the ball handler towards the sideline, trap him there, force a turnover, and that's where Ariza does a great job. That's why he's leading the league in steals, because he plays the passing lanes well. He's able to make that calculated risk and get the force a turnover. So I think you sung the praises there, and I agree with you. The coaching staff has done a great job with these players. They fully bought in. They know the system defensively and offensively, and that's why the Rockets are 39 and only a few games behind the Warriors for the number one seed, which is pretty incredible to think about. If you had told me this before the season, I would have just been like, no, you're crazy, because I did not expect this fast of a start for them. I thought, you know what, they could start playing well, because D'Antoni's teams have always been very fast offensively and always around the middle of the pack defensively. But the Rockets right now are fourth in defense since December. So,
yeah.
I mean, this team has come off to an incredible start, and now it's all about can they continue to improve.
Sure.
The coaching staff has done a great job instituting the offense. Mike D'Antoni needs a great job there. But the Rockets are still a little, you know, if you even think about it, they're still a little slow in transition, which is crazy to think about, but they are.
Yeah.
And I think as there's more games going on, as Harden gets more comfortable in his offense, you'll see them get more into a 7 seconds or less rhythm. Right now, it's more so Harden bringing the ball up, and they run their first weak side action set and strong side action set, and you know, start running around, 18, 17, 16 seconds. And then sometimes they take a while, they run in at 12 seconds. I think as the season progresses, you'll see them start running those sets around 19, 20 seconds, and it's attack, and attacking creates miscommunication defensively.
One more question before we turn over to the guard, specifically James Harden, Pat Beverly, the stuff they're doing there. One more question on the bigs. What's the ideal matchup for Nene? Because obviously, it seems pretty clear. I know they started the year kind of splitting the minutes 24-24 with Nene and Capella. But Capella came on, Harrell came on, and I think it's pretty clear that Nene is best used in short bursts, you know, those 15 to 20 minute games. I think the Oklahoma City, when he was, 6 of 6 for 18 points what, I think just 17 minutes. So basically, what I'm curious about, it seems like the bigger the opponent, when I think of teams like Oklahoma City, Orlando, that are pretty big, pretty physical, is that where you use Nene? Because obviously there are going to be some matchups where you just, you know, you may not even use him at all. You just want the athleticism of Harrell and Capella when he's back, and, you know, you lean on that. But then there are others where you want, you know, Nene's presence, his passing, his physicality. So I'm just curious how you see it, because I know it's going to be a gut feel process, but what are the matchups that to you scream, okay, this is one where we really want to deploy Nene?
You know, I think it's just, it goes by matchups, and I think like it's all about how the opposing team adapts to the Rockets. Mm. You know, I think that's one of the biggest things we've noticed this season is our opposing teams have been forced to change their lineups to match up with Houston. You saw that last night with Toronto. We've seen that a few times this season. And the Rockets do the same thing. When they see Valanciunas, they're like, you know, let's put Nene. When they see Vucevic or when they see Ibaka, hey, let's put in Nene. So I think when you're playing guys who have more of a back-to-the-basket game, you'll see Nene starting. And I think that's also good for Nene. Because Nene, you know, believe it or not, has enough lateral quickness, especially offensively, to beat a guy off the dribble and beat him as a role man. I mean, we've seen those dunks the past few games, and that's not a wild stat. He's been doing that. He's played incredible. I know in the Olympics, he averaged 13 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists in like 29 minutes a game. And he was the primary presence in the low block. And he looked incredible. He's much more lean this season. I think that plays a major role. And I think the Rockets are best served playing him against those bigger guys because I think he can actually outwork them down low and beat them to the basket. And I think that's what you want from him. Especially when Capella comes back, I think we go back to that 3 big rotation that we saw early this season.
Yep.
With Capella playing 24, 30 minutes, before Capella's injury, it was actually Harrell playing more time than Nene.
Yep.
And I think Nene will see a little bit more time depending on how Harrell struggles on the board. Because I think D'Antonio, he says he plays it by ear and he needs it. When Harrell's struggling on the board, we'll put in Nene right back in there. So I think that I agree with you there. It's just going to depend on who they're playing. But I think Nene can definitely beat guys like Valanciunas, guys like David Lee, guys like that off the dribble and pick and roll situations. And he's able to finish, you know. In the beginning of the season, he kind of struggled to get going on the roll with Harden, but with this newfound chemistry they both have, I think he's played really well, and I think that's only going to help him increase his playing time, especially as somebody who's been able to rebound the ball really effectively.
Good stuff. Ali, we'll get back to the guards in just a moment. Wanted to lead off with the centers because that's where we've seen a lot of changes of late. We'll talk about Harden, Beverly, Eric Gordon in just a moment. For now, I do want to pause and acknowledge our great sponsors at SeatGeek. Because if you look at the ticket marketplace around the NBA and you want to buy tickets to any of these games upcoming at Toyota Center, including the Warriors just a week away, well, SeatGeek to me looks like the smartest, easiest way to find tickets. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it is so freaking easy to shop for tickets. I can be anywhere, just with a few taps. You can instantly find seats for any game all year, including that Warriors showdown. They always give you the best bang for your buck, because they do all the price comparisons, they search multiple ticket sites, and they even grade every single ticket based on value, so that you know you're finding some great deals. And remember, every ticket on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee, so you can shop with full confidence that their deals are legit. Anyway, here's the important part. To get your $20 rebate, courtesy of being a Locked On Rockets listener, here's what you do. Download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click add a promo code, then enter the promo code LORockets. SeatGeek will then send you $20 in the mail after you've made your first ticket purchase. So remember, download that SeatGeek app and enter the promo code LORockets today. So jumping back into the show with Ali Bajani, a.k.a. Rockets Insider on Twitter, works with SB Nation Radio, ESPN 975, Clutch fans. You guys all know where to find him. We spent the first part of the show, we jumped around on a few topics, mostly bigs, a little bit of team defense. One thing we didn't touch too much on are changes in regards to the backcourt and the X's and O's of what the Rockets are doing this year, I'll say 2017, as Ali, you pointed out, it's your first episode this year. And one of the new things, on New Year's Eve, that was the insane game where Harden went for 53, 17, and 16 against the Knicks. And then you had the absence of Pat Beverly. So between Harden basically playing out of his mind and the Pat Beverly injury, teams started to do a few things a little bit different. For example, the Oklahoma City game, which was the first one that Beverly was back, I remember you pointing out that they were literally doubling Harden on basically every single screen. So I'm curious, you know, what you're seeing, how teams are defending Harden, and how he is adjusting. Because, you know, when you look at James's stats, he was obviously very good against Oklahoma City. He had an off night against Orlando, maybe his worst game of the year. And then he bounced back Sunday, other than the turnovers, just a ridiculous game in Toronto with 40, 11, and 10. So just curious how you're seeing James's play, both from a defense standpoint and what he's doing on the offensive end.
You know, defensively, the effort's been there. I mean, he's going to have lapses. Okay, like this is not a thing where he's like gonna play defense 40 minutes. I mean, he has such high load offensively. We can't expect that. But when a game comes down in the fourth quarter, he's playing defense and he's playing really hard and he's making the right reads. I think the best example of that is yesterday's game with those two clutch defensive plays. Coach elected to take out Harrell and Nene, and he put Ryan Anderson at the five. Now, when that happens, the Rockets will usually switch everything or have to do a great job on rotation. And Harden has played the help side defender usually every single time, and they have that and just giving a reason still the freedom to play the free safety role. And yesterday, Harden made a fantastic read to draw the charge, stepped in there, took it, and then the next possession, you know, he hit that big shot. So I think right now, you know, James Harden, he's playing like an MVP because he's very engaged. And to your point about how defenses are playing him, mm-hmm. I think the one thing we'll notice, especially come playoff time, especially from better teams, is that teams with length, like Orlando, have a blueprint on how to defend Harden. Now, and Oklahoma City as well. And I think what you're noticing is that they'll continue to either hedge hard or trap him out high and then play the passing lanes to make, you know, force him to make a cross-court pass or one pass away turnover. And that's why he struggled in Orlando. It's because the Magic did a great job of playing the passing lanes. They played the shooters well. They rotated back defensively. And I think that Orlando game is a good blueprint for opposing teams to look at and say, hey, how can we affect James Harden's game? Now, whenever he was trapped, though, you saw him make those ridiculous bounce passes with those ridiculous passes just off the roll. I mean, I think one area, despite the turnovers, where he's improved vastly this season, is that he's always been a great passer, but he's improved mightily on that bounce pass. I think last year, Ben, me and you both discussed on Twitter, he would have a lot of turnovers off of that. Teams would force him and dare him to make those bounce passes, and he always did, and easily resulted in turnovers. This season, he's finding those small holes between the legs, whatever, and he's giving it to the role man, and they're able to finish inside. But I think that's one area where he's worked on with this trainer, and that he's improved upon, and I think that's showing dividends this season, especially as a pick and roll facilitator.
Yeah. The other thing that stood out, now I know some of it is matchups, and as you said, Oklahoma City and Orlando, a little bit bigger than Toronto, but even aside from that, people want to focus on controlling what you can control. And there's been a little bit of anxiety in some games this year of what happens late in close games to the Rockets' offense. Because it's that classic NBA conundrum of, okay, I know the Rockets don't play at the breakneck pace. I know, as you were saying earlier, they're not quite to that 7 seconds or less. But they do play at an above-average pace. And late in games, there's a tendency for things to slow down a little bit because you do have to acknowledge the clock. And there's always this, you know, delicate balance that you're trying to strike between running your offense and playing the clock as you should. And I really thought yesterday in Toronto was the best example I've seen yet of how the Rockets did both. How they were able to play with a lead in the final 5 minutes and yet still retain some semblance of their offense. I know it's not as simple as saying, James, don't play hero ball, because there's a lot more that goes into it than that. Obviously, a lot of it starts with movement away from the ball, what his teammates are doing. But I'm just curious if you saw the same thing, because to me, if you look at the final 5 minutes against Oklahoma City and you compare it to the final 5 minutes in Toronto, I thought you saw some clear progress out of James as well as the rest of the team at really treating those final 5 minutes the same as the first 43, just going out and running your offense rather than being overly concerned with the time or hero ball, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think one thing we noticed was is that whenever they had a break where they had numbers, they attacked the break and finished all of the Eric Gordon layup yesterday. So about 2 minutes left. I think what you're also noticing is that, yes, they're playing their offense, but they're acknowledging the time like we talked about. Yesterday, they ran a lot of their double drag screen sets where they have Eric Gordon come up on the corner and catch and shoot or catch and roll situation. And that happened in the last 2 minutes sometimes as well. And if that didn't work out, then what they would do was just run a simple pick and roll with James Harden, acknowledge the clock, and just hope for the best with his shot selection. So I think that the Rockets are not going to, you know, take away the ball from James Harden in those situations. I think he's always going to have the green light to do whatever he wants to as a decision maker. But I think they've added a couple wrinkles in there, especially in the half court, just to make it easier for him. That, hey, if something opens up and the defense isn't set, go ahead and pass it and take the open shot. But if not, I think they're going to live with, and I think as fans, the fans should live with James Harden just dribbling, getting a simple screen, seeing if he can get a mismatch on the switch, and just taking advantage of it, driving or selling for a step-back jumper. Because, you know, Harden, more times than not, he's been able to close out games for the team. And I think you have to continue to keep him confident and continue to do that.
Yep. Two more members of the backcourt we haven't talked too much about yet, and I'm curious how you see them being used. Eric Gordon and Pat Beverly. I'll start with what I've seen from Gordon, and I believe I mentioned this briefly earlier, but I think you're seeing more and more Gordon becoming a playmaker. Last night, I think he was 1 of 9 from three, but he was actually 6 of 7 inside the arc, and so you're seeing him make more plays to the rim. You know, I think early in the season, he was kind of a little bit of a spot-up shooter, feeling his way into, okay, how do I play with Harden? And now you're seeing a greater comfort zone of guys like Eric knowing exactly when is their time. And I think it's showing pretty clearly, it's also a testament to James Harden's willingness to share the ball, that yes, James can play with another playmaker. And to those people who criticized the Ty Lawson experiment for James, I always said that was off base, but it's pretty clear now that James can play with another, you know, guard playmaker. It's just Ty Lawson was not a good basketball player. Eric Gordon is proving that right now. Now, as far as Pat Beverly, I know Pat Beverly is not the same, he's not a playmaker in the same vein as Gordon. Thankfully, after coming back from the wrist injury, he has shot the ball really well from three. That's always welcome. Maybe he needs to play with a bandaged wrist all the time. But beyond that, I feel like Beverly's been so important for them because of how he lets Gordon continue to play off the ball. You know, early this year, I felt like part of the problem was that, you know, if Gordon plays with Harden, then he's going to play off the ball. And then in those stretches that Harden wasn't in the game, Gordon had to be the, bring up the ball, kind of the traditional point guard. It was tough to bounce back and forth. Whereas now, as long as you have Pat Beverly, no matter how Pat Beverly is shooting himself, Harden's the point guard and the, you know, the 36 minutes a night he plays. And then even in those stretches without Harden, you have Beverly as the point guard. So it keeps Gordon in that same role. And so to me, that seems to be really helping him. I'm curious how you see that.
You know, I agree with you. I think they have great chemistry. The Rockets' best offense, in my opinion, and their most effective offense has been off the bench when Beverly and Gordon are together. And that may be just because they're playing against smaller units, second units for opposing teams who aren't as good. But, man, they get into the offensive sets and they're so effective. There's one particular set I talked about previously on Clutch Fans. It's the 1-2 dribble handoff situation where Beverly brings the ball up, gives it to Gordon, and he just launches a three and hits it. I think earlier this season, last time when I was writing that article, Gordon was shooting around 50% on those catch and shoot threes. I mean, that's an insane number, and that's something that him and Beverly have great chemistry. So the offense looks so good, and when Beverly gets a screen from Hill or Hernan Whalers in the game at the time, he drives and kicks out to Gordon for three. Or Beverly, who's shooting, I think, 44% from three right now, or 43% right now from three. When Gordon gets the ball, he's able to find Beverly or finish inside. And I think one thing that we're not talking about enough, and I try to highlight on Twitter as much as I can, or whenever I'm writing a piece, is Gordon's ability to handle basketball. He has a fantastic hesitation dribble. Mm-hmm. He's able to freeze the defender, drive inside, and finish. And he has great footwork, something that I did not notice, and I know some of my friends who cover the Pelicans are pretty angry about that because they didn't see that enough when he played with the Pelicans. But I think you're seeing him with his knees healthy, that he's attacking more, his quickness is there, that dribble is there. He has, he even has an in-and-out dribble, which freezes defenders. And I kind of want to do a film study on that. A lot of people on Twitter said they would love to read that, so I'm probably going to do it. I think it's something to look at, just because he's able to freeze a defender, drive inside, and still finish over contact or pass out to an open three. And if Gordon can continue to do that, that only helps Harden lose some minutes. So Gordon continue to play, Beverly can continue to run the offense, and Harden isn't playing 35, 37, 40 minutes a night, and he can continue, we can alleviate some of his minutes, so when come playoff time, he's fresh and healthy.
Absolutely. Ollie, last question for you. If you could make one move to improve the team by the deadline, what do you think it is? I think we're in kind of agreement that it's not going to be a big move, because getting any sort of, I'll say Paul Millsap, but anyone of that level would require taking someone out of the core to make the salary cap math work, and I cannot imagine the Rockets being willing to do that, considering that they're already playing at an elite level. We've heard previously about them being in the market for another big. Kosta Kufis is one name that was thrown out there. We've also heard the possibility of looking for another wing player, another guard, someone to give you more insurance in the area of Pat Beverly, or maybe if Corey Brewer goes on a shooting slump to fill some of those minutes. But basically, Beverly's injuries, Brewer's inconsistency. I'm just curious, if the Rockets can make one move, where do you think it is, or what would your preference be? Because I'll tell you, for me, a couple of weeks ago, I was in the camp of get one more defensive big. We knew that was what they wanted with Donatas Mateyunas, and we knew it was a weakness for the center spot in certain games. But with the way Herrell and Nene continue to develop, and Capella's return seemingly imminent, the last couple of weeks, I'm starting to lean a little bit more towards maybe one more reserve wing player, because obviously Beverly's wrist, you can be a little bit nervous about that. And then, of course, Corey Brewer, we know what his limitations are. So it's a tough call. I could see them going both ways. But right now, I might be leaning, if I could shore up depth in one spot, potentially do it at the guard/wing spot. I'm curious where you fall on that.
Yeah, I've always thought that Herrell and Nene can cover it up until Capella comes back. I think Capella's coming back in a few more weeks. I think that's what D'Antoni said to us in the press conference before the game last week.
Mm-hmm.
He's about a few more weeks away, I think. But so we'll probably find out. He said end of January is about the time that we'll probably have an update. So let's see where he is on that. But I think for me, I agree with you. For me, it's a wing guy. When you're playing Corey Brewer, not all teams who are in the playoffs are going to help off of Corey. Are going to stay on Corey Brewer. Meaning that these teams will literally ignore Corey Brewer the same way they ignore Iguodala when he's playing with the deadline up and force him to take those shots and make threes. And you can't have that. What are you playing this offense? You need to give Harden as much space as possible. And I think you definitely need some insurance with Patrick Beverley. As well as he's playing, Patrick Beverley has been hurt. He had right wrist pain. He had a quad injury, I believe, a few weeks back. When he's playing, the Rockets are 20-4 this season, which is terrific. But when he's not playing, that's when the Rockets have problems, especially with that second year offense. And like we both discussed today with Eric Gordon's ability to be a secondary playmaker with Gordon, Harden, and Douglas. So I think I'm with you. I think you need another wing player, somebody who's not a game wrecker, but somebody who's able to play the role that Brewer and Beverly would play late game in the situation. Somebody who can defend the perimeter, somebody who can do pass and shoot threes, and somebody who's able to attack closeouts. I think one guy I was looking at personally was Kyle Korver. Now, he's gone to Cleveland, so that's not there. But it's interesting to see who, comes out as we approach the trade deadline and who's available. I think there will be guys available on these teams now making the postseason, looking to add some value in this season's draft, which is a very good draft, in my opinion. So I think, and the Rockets do have the first round pick, I believe, and they do have two good second round picks. So I think the Rockets will have assets, especially for this year's draft, to dangle to opposing teams. It's just going to be a matter of who's available and what's the price.
Yep.
But I agree with you. It's going to have to be a wing player who can give some insurance, because that's all they need right now. They have versatility. The more versatility you add to a team like this, the better you are. So Let's see what happens come February with the trade deadline.
Yep, I could see it being a veteran as well. We know 2 years ago that was when Morey made the move for Pablo Prigioni, and a lot of people wondered why he's not even going to join the rotation. And before you know it, Pablo Prigioni is playing a big role in Game 7 in the playoffs against the Clippers. One name that I've said on the show I'm going to keep an eye on is Jarrett Jack. He's about to have his audition coming off the year-long injury. I know he's someone the Rockets have been interested in the past, and maybe if he shows something, I could see him being the kind of, you know, veteran that they would take a flyer on, let him continue to rehab off the bench, and maybe by March or April, he rounds into form a little bit. That's just one idea, but I think we're on the same page in terms of the type of guys that they'll go after. Ollie, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate you, as always, sharing the excellent insight, the X's and O's, the film study, whatever you want to call it. It's a tremendous asset to the Rockets community. Ollie, for anybody that's not following you already, tell people where they can follow you on Twitter, as well as where they can find your writing, basically any self-promotion you want to throw out there.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at Rockets_Insider. You can also search my name, A-L-Y, Bijani, B-I-J-A-N-I, on Twitter. You can find me there. I write for ESPN Houston and SB Nation Radio. And I'll be putting on a film study soon. Seems like a lot of people are also interested in James, basically Eric Gordon's ability to handle basketball. His hesitation dribble and his in-and-out dribble, and seeing how effective that's been throughout the season. So look out for that soon. But thank you again for having me on, Ben. It's always fun to do this.
Sure thing. I'll see you this week at Toyota Center, okay?
Yes, sir.
That's Ollie Vajani, Rockets_Insider on Twitter. Always appreciate him jumping on here at Locked on Rockets with the analysis. And, well, I can't say it much better than he did, so I will end it right there for this off-day episode of Locked on Rockets. Again, I'm Ben Dubose. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. This is Locked on Rockets. You can follow the show on Twitter at Locked on Rockets. You can subscribe to us, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Audio Boom. Just search for Locked on Rockets. You can also email us at LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. With questions, suggestions, you name it, we want to be your daily resource for coverage of this Houston Rockets basketball team. It's a fun year. I can't get enough of talking about these guys, so I appreciate you guys so much for listening and giving me an outlet to talk about their incredible play. Now 30-9 on the year, on pace to go 63-19 this season, top three in a loaded Western Conference, 19-2 in their last 21 games, 8-game winning streak currently, and really just 2.5 games back of the Warriors for the number one seed and the best record in the entire NBA, with the Warriors, by the way, coming to Toyota Center a week from Friday. So all of a sudden, we're not just talking about the Rockets being a pretty good team, we're talking about the Rockets being an elite team. And well, if you want to be at that huge Golden State-Houston showdown next Friday, can't think of many other places to, or many better places to get tickets than SeatGeek, the sponsor of today's show. Remember, if you download the SeatGeek mobile app, you can buy tickets very easily for that or any other game, and the promo code LORockets will get you a $20 rebate on your first purchase from SeatGeek. So thanks again to them for sponsoring this show. Thanks to you guys for listening. It's a Monday off day, but we'll be back in full force with game recaps tomorrow night as the Rockets return to action on Tuesday evening at Toyota Center to host the Charlotte Hornets. For now, I'll sign off. Talk to you guys then. Enjoy your day.